Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
A group of Democrats, independents, and one Republican walked out of the state house and have effectively vanished.
The Alaska House minority disappears in a dispute over increased education funding. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, April 5th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, more delays getting body-worn cameras on Anchorage police.
This is past the point of frustration. It's ridiculous.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's 3 universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Most members of the Alaska House minority disappeared from the Capitol today in a dispute over tying increased education funding to spending from the state's savings account. That surprise came as the House tried to hash out a state budget that, for now, still includes a huge gap between revenue and proposed spending, and big questions about how to pay for state services as well as this year's permanent fund dividend. Alaska Beacon reporter James Brooks has been covering the legislature for about a decade and says today was one of the weirdest he's ever seen.
Basically, members of the House minority, a group of Democrats, independents, and one Republican, walked out of the state house and have effectively vanished. And they did that in order to avoid a vote on a controversial amendment to an amendment dealing with public school funding. Basically, what the amendment would do is tie a vote on spending for public schools to a separate vote on spending from a state savings account to cover a projected budget deficit.
It is Juneau. It seems like it'd be hard to flee the state capital as it is just geographically. So,
well, I've been looking at ferry schedules and talking to people at the airport and even just walking around downtown Juneau to see, hey, are there any legislators on the other side of that window? But I haven't found anything. And as far as I can tell, the House majority hasn't found anything either.
So remind us how we got here. There was some news yesterday about some temporary education funding at least being approved in that process. What was that?
Yeah, we got here because when the budget hit the House floor on Monday, there was a projected deficit of about $418 million for the 12 months that start July 1st. That's the budget we're talking about here. And lawmakers inserted another $175 million in temporary aid to K-12 public schools. If you distribute that according to the state's per student funding formula, that works out to just under $50 million for Anchorage, over $24 million for the MATSU, and smaller amounts for other school districts. Those districts have been asking for funding increases, saying that inflation has really hit their budgets hard, forced them to cut programs, cut staff, and resulted in poorer education for public school students. So when that amendment passed, it increased the deficit to a little under $600 million. The state's primary savings account, the Constitutional Budget Reserve, would be used to pay for that deficit, and that's what today's argument was about. Members of the minority didn't want to be forced to vote for the spending from savings in order to get the education funding that they support.
Where would that money come from, though, to cover the deficit if not from the CBR?
there's not an easy option except, and this isn't all that easy, except overspending from the permanent fund. Because each year there is a limit on the amount of money that's transferred from the permanent fund to the state treasury, specifically to prevent situations like this where lawmakers might be pressured to spend beyond what's sustainable from the permanent fund.
Right, yeah. And I guess I can see how sort of differing ideologies might be at play here. And of course, I mean, we've kind of been in a similar situation in the past, right, with the permanent fund dividend. So I should ask, I mean, where is the legislature at with setting an amount for the PFD, and how does that factor into this kind of this larger budget discussion?
Right. And that's what the members of the minority have suggested is their preferred solution, is to reduce the permanent fund dividend from $2,700 per recipient down to about $1,300 and $1,350 per recipient. That takes care of your deficit, but at the same time, it's not the preferred option for all legislators because higher dividends are preferred by voters.
That was Alaska Beacon reporter James Brooks, whose work you can find at alaskabeacon.com. And Brooks just sent an update from Juneau. He says members of the House minority have returned to the state capitol this afternoon to continue voting on amendments. So for now, the budget crafting process is back on track. Federal prosecutors say a former Houston treasurer stole more than $1 million from the Mat-Su community and a Wasilla company he later worked for. 65-year-old Jess George Adams was arrested this week on wire fraud, money laundering, and tax evasion charges. Prosecutors say Adams' three-year tenure as treasurer gave him access to Houston's accounting books. He allegedly used that access to transfer more than $250,000 of city funds to personal bank accounts before he was placed on administrative leave and resigned in 2018. Prosecutors say Adams also used similar methods to embezzle nearly $900,000 from a Wasilla-based equipment company he worked for. Adams is being held at the Anchorage Correctional Complex after an initial court appearance today. Anchorage police officials say the timeline to put body cameras on officers has hit another delay. As Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, some assembly members say they may need to take a more hands-on approach to get the cameras implemented.
Community members are tired of waiting for body cameras, says Chugiak Eagle River Assembly Member Kevin Cross.
I've been telling my community councils that we've been moving forward and giving them, you know, widely optimistic, or at least mildly optimistic feedback. So now I'm going to have to go back this month and say sorry. And they're going to want answers.
Cross spoke at an Assembly Public Safety Committee meeting Wednesday, where Deputy Police Chief Sean Case gave an update on the status of body cameras. The police department and the union representing the officers have been locked in negotiations over the body camera policy for months. They announced last year that they would enter arbitration over it, which was set to begin as early as April. Case told Assembly members that arbitration has now been delayed to late fall.
There's an additional issue that came up in negotiations, and both parties agreed that that additional complication with the policy that came up required more preparation time and potentially even a longer arbitration period.
Case said he couldn't go into details over what issue is delaying the arbitration process. Back in 2021, Anchorage voters approved a $1.8 million tax levy to purchase and implement body cameras for officers. Celeste Hodge Groudon is president of the nonprofit Alaska Black Caucus, which has long advocated for the body cameras. During public testimony at the meeting, she criticized the lack of answers on what's holding up the arbitration.
This is past the point of frustration. It's ridiculous. It just seems that at every meeting, there's a whole new situation that prolongs officers from being outfitted with body cam.
The Anchorage Police Department is among the last large public safety departments in the state without body cameras. Departments in cities like Fairbanks and Juneau have officers outfitted with cameras, as do smaller rural communities like Kotzebue and Nome. The Alaska State Troopers released a draft body camera policy in February. Cross says that so far, the Assembly has taken a hands-off approach to the body camera policy, letting the police department and the union work it out on their own. But he said he doesn't think it'll stay that way.
My anticipation is that given this most recent information, they're probably going to take a a more proactive role with some sort of resolution or an executive session to figure out why this doesn't seem to be progressing.
While the body cameras are still months away from being implemented, Anchorage Police Chief Michael Curl says the department is working to finalize the vendor of the cameras. He says a decision will be made by the end of next week. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the U.S. Forest Service is among those searching for summer employees.
This is super rare in our agency. I don't remember a single other time when we've hired so many permanent positions.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health. But did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by Snap.
Left-of-center candidates are leading in 6 out of 7 Anchorage Assembly races after voting ended and the initial batch of unofficial municipal election results were released last night. Tens of thousands more ballots are expected to be counted in the coming days, but as of election night, the gaps between each leading candidate and their closest opponent were wide, ranging from 11 to 42 percentage points. At a subdued election night party in a downtown office, conservative South Anchorage candidate Rachel Reese reacted to the initial results.
People who vote early, that's always the way, right? It tends to be a little more progressive or left-leaning on the vote, and then the people who tend to be more conservative or right-leaning do it in person, so I expect there to be some shifts.
The assembly is nonpartisan, though in recent years it's been dominated by an unofficial block of progressives. The 12-member assembly has clashed with conservative Mayor Dave Bronson since he took office in 2021. Progressive Assembly incumbent Felix Rivera said he felt like the mayor was spending an unusual amount of time and energy publicly criticizing him in the run-up to the election. Rivera, who is leading his conservative opponent Travis Santo, had two takeaways from the initial results.
The people want a strong assembly to act as a check to this mayor. The second thing I think this says is that people are sick and tired of candidates who are running fear-based and anger-based campaigns.
The two incumbent Anchorage School Board members running for re-election, Andy Holloman and Dave Donnelly, also have wide leads. And as of election night, 14 of 15 ballot propositions were passing. The only one failing asked voters to make procedural and timing changes on how to fill vacancies on the assembly or in the mayor's office. Other questions asked voters to authorize up to $84 million in municipal debt, mostly for school and road infrastructure. Voters backed a question to sweeten a residential property tax break by nearly 3-1. And a proposal to use marijuana taxes to fund childcare and early education is passing. Former Anchorage legislator Ivy Sponholz helped organize the campaign for that one. She's encouraged by the initial results.
It shows that there is a widespread recognition across all ends of the political spectrum that childcare is important not only for families but also for our business community.
Election officials plan to update the unofficial results each evening this week. The U.S. Forest Service is seeking new recruits nationwide with extra focus on filling positions in Alaska. But recruiters say economic conditions are making it hard for them to recruit and retain employees who come from out of state. KFSK's Shelby Herbert has more on how the agency is turning its attention to the local workforce.
America is in the grip of a widespread labor shortage. According to the latest data from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, there are over 10 million job openings in the U.S., but only 5.7 million unemployed workers. The U.S. Forest Service has not been spared from the shortage, and recruiters say it's especially hard to bring people to Alaska. Toby Backus is a wildlife biologist for the Petersburg Forest Service District. He helped set up for a local hiring event on March 2nd. Backus says it's part of the biggest hiring frenzy he's seen in his decades-long career with the Forest Service. the Petersburg District is advertising 20 temporary positions as well as 6 permanent positions. 15 of those will open within the next 2 weeks.
This is super rare in our agency. I don't remember a single other time when we've hired so many permanent positions at one moment in time.
Petersburg District Ranger Ray Bourne says he hopes the new hiring initiative will help his team make up for years of attrition. His district saw a wave of retirements during the pandemic. Bourne says the Petersburg Forest Service District is also flush with funding for new projects in the Tongass National Forest, but those projects require more staff.
A bunch of different laws have been passed over the couple of years. We got increased funding, but increased projects, so we need more people.
Tiffany Christensen is an admin support assistant for the Forest Service. She says the agency isn't just looking for anybody. They're specifically seeking out workers with strong ties to the area. Christensen says hands-on experience living and working in the Tongass National Forest is valuable to the agency, even more valuable than certain academic credentials.
So someone who has local knowledge kind of has a leg up on someone who's never been to Alaska. So in other words, maybe they haven't gone and studied these particular sciences in a college down south, but they've lived and grown up in it.
Jason Steele is a Forest Service recruitment specialist. He's not originally from Alaska, but he recognizes the importance of hiring people who know the area best.
I could not have moved to Alaska and hit the ground running in these positions because I don't know about these things. And the local community, people that have worked here, they do know about all these. What knowledge do you have of bear habitat behavior in the area and how you would safely work in bear-populated areas in South Central or Southeast Alaska?
But there are also practical reasons for why the Forest Service is trying to source people locally. Bourne says locals are also better equipped to stay, especially in the current climate of economic hardship.
We bring people in and they're like, you mean I can't drive to my next town? Okay, some people that's just not ready for that Alaska adventure, as I call that.
Bourne says Alaska's remoteness deters potential hires from taking the leap, especially in the Southeast, where people have to take planes and boats to access the outside world. However, Bourne says one of the worst obstacles to hiring people from outside is Petersburg's housing market. Petersburg has struggled with a housing shortage for decades. That lack of housing is already making it difficult for local government offices, like the Petersburg School District, to bring in workers from out of town. Bourne says the Petersburg Ranger District expects up to 40 new workers this year, but they only have 36 beds in their bunkhouse, and there's no space in the bunkhouse for the families they might bring with them. He's working with local realtors to try to ease the pressure, but he says this is why it makes sense to hire people who are already settled in the area. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
And by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. If you are experiencing domestic violence or feel unsafe, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is here for you. Call 1-844-762-8483 or visit strongheartshelpline.org. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Germany's ambassador to the United States was in Alaska recently for the first time in at least 3 decades, and maybe ever. Ambassador Emily Haber visited Anchorage for the Arctic Encounter Symposium, a gathering of leaders from Arctic or Arctic-adjacent countries. And as Haber told Alaska Public Media's Lori Townsend, there are 2 key reasons why there has been increasing focus on the Arctic region.
One obviously being climate change and the effects of climate change in Alaska on the rest of the world. They will be huge. It's not only about melting ice sheets in Alaska or deborealization and so forth. No, it's about the existential issue, how global climate will look into in the future and how we deal with it. And the second reason obviously is The Russian aggression against Ukraine doesn't, well, happens in a faraway geography, but it's not totally disconnected with what happens in the Arctic for the very simple reason, which is Russia, the aggressor, is very close to Alaska and is a major Arctic player, given the fact that it has about half of the Arctic territory. That may alter Arctic politics and Arctic policies in ways that are very difficult to predict today. And that's why I'm here.
Well, thank you. You've queued up a few of my questions quite nicely, but I did want to ask a little bit more about the Arctic Encounter Symposium. Ambassador, you participated in a session at Arctic Encounters titled Partnering for the Future, Europe and the Arctic. What did this discussion center on? Resource potential in the Arctic, growing security concerns, and how do you see Germany having a role in these Arctic matters?
Well, Germany is not a member of the Arctic Council. We're an observer. That means we are in a different league than, say, the US or Canada or Finland or Iceland and Sweden. That's a fact. But as I said, global climate change and the specific and massive effects of this climate change on the Arctic region will spill over in ways that will also be massive. And that's what we need to talk about. I'm here because in this conversation, the interests of the local populations will figure large, as will national interests, but there are also global conditions that will play a role. And Germany is one of the most globalized countries in the world, and we want to be part of that conversation. Beyond that, the panel that you have quoted focused very much on the changing European interest in the Arctic. So the European Union as such has a stake in the Arctic as well. And Arctic policies are part of the general diplomatic and foreign policy conversation we're having in the European Union, where in turn Germany plays its role, obviously.
Thank you so much for that. And let's drill down a bit there, Ambassador Haber. Your past work includes years of experience in Russia, working at the German embassy in Moscow. What are your thoughts about the current situation with Russia and China becoming more aligned and a growing focus by those nations and others on Arctic resources? How can cooperation be maintained in the Arctic to avoid military conflict there in the future?
The Arctic Council in the past has less so focused on security and strategic issues, but has focused on pressing governance issues. Now, obviously, the relationship with Russia, or at least cooperation with Russia, has been suspended. So Russia does not play an active role in the Arctic Council. That's one of the consequences of the Russian aggression against Ukraine. And at the same time, you alluded to it, we do see that Russia, which has been, to date at least, fairly skeptical about giving China any space in the Arctic, is now in a different situation. China is not an Arctic nation. It considers itself as a near Arctic a nation. We shall see how that evolves, and we shall see to what extent Russia will be capable or even ready to prevent China from pushing the boundaries. These are issues we need to discuss, or Arctic nations need to discuss in the Arctic Council.
That was German Ambassador Emily Haber speaking with Alaska Public Media's Lori Townsend. Students in Sitka recently had an opportunity to study cedar bark basketry with one of the masters of the art. Holly Churchill, who is following in the footsteps of her mother, famed Haida weaver Dolores Churchill, taught art classes at the Sitka campus of the University of Alaska Southeast in March. Students from Pacific High School also attended for dual credit toward college. KCAW reporter at large Carrie Sagel dropped by one of the classes and discovered that weaving is a quiet art, but one with lifetime benefits. She sent this audio postcard.
So just like Sesame Street, we make little upside down V's, and I make a little jingle out of the Western Red Cedar Cambium. My potlatch given name is Glukna, which means to strive for greatness. And I potlatch that
in 91. And my mother's name is Dolores Churchill. And I introduced her in speaking in Haida. And my grandmother is, or Nani, is Selena Pradovich. And I learned to weave baskets by mentoring underneath Dolores Churchill. And my grandmother taught my mother. And therefore, it has been in our family for centuries.
Well, I'm Kiana, and I've been working on a form line frog piece on a canvas for a little while now.
Why did you choose a frog for your form line art?
I am a part of the Kiksadi clan, and that's Raven Frog. So
it represents your clan?
Yeah, it represents a part of me and my family.
My reason of taking up basket weaving and working with children is because I really believe you can build esteem through the arts, and which is really important, because in the arts you can learn more about yourself, or I should say as much as you can if you're taking a math class or an English class. And in art, you build on what you know, the knowledge that is gifted to you. So if I'm teaching someone to do diagonal weaving and they learn by looking and watching my hands making the motions, they fumble a bit at first. And then sometimes you're taking out their work, and then they're putting it back in, and they build on the movement and the coordination.
Tell us what you're doing there.
Oh, this is the diagonal weaving technique. My name is Ellie. With this project, I am weaving a headband out of cedar strips. Holly showed me how last year and showed me how to start them this year, which is really cool.
What is wonderful about basket weaving in youth is that they will learn a simple technique. And it might not be the next year or the following year, but it'll spark a hobby, an interest. You know, it might not be baskets, but with carving or painting. But they'll realize that they have the ability to rest their mind through the activities that they learn. And they build their esteem, and it gives them confidence. And in just not in just that particular piece that you just learned, but in life.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts, including Spotify. We had reports tonight from Chris Clint, Wesley Early, Jeremy Shea, and Lori Townsend in Anchorage, Shelby Herbert in Petersburg, and Carrie Sagel in Sitka. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
The greatest compliment to a public media station is when a listener becomes a member. So do your part today by becoming a part of the team officially. Thank you for making a donation.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.